Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Grab an award-winning pie from Sherry's for your next football viewing party or tailgater. Sherry's Cafe and Pies. Fresh, local, delicious.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome in to Hour 2 here on Dirt and Sprague. If you missed Hour 1, check it out after the show. 1080thefan.com, the Les Schwab Tires podcast. We'll use social media to get that out to you after the show. And by social media, I mean Twitter, at 1080 The Fan, at Dirt and Sprague, our show page.
That's how we roll.
We've got a loaded second hour, a lot to get to here. We'll talk about the Pac-12 games. Who the hell is going to win the Pac-12 South right now? Really hard to determine that one. We'll talk about the ALCS, which kicks off tonight. We'll talk about the Portland Trail Blazers a little bit. They lost to the Clippers last night. I think they have 3 preseason games left before they kick things off.
Yeah, a week from Tuesday, the regular season starts. How about that?
It's right around the corner, man.
It is. Did you guys see, by the way, I know we're waiting for Andy Levitre. Did you see Mike McCoy after the game last night?
He cried.
He cried.
Good like, for him. Dirt, if I told you, hold on, let's put this in context for a second.
He got a regular season win to get to 2-4.
Well, yeah, he also beat the defending Super Bowl champs, who looked pretty damn good.
All right.
Let me just say this. You can't defend what he's done in crunch time situations for his team.
No, he's an awful coach.
But if I told you, hey, Dirt, if your show isn't great today,
you get fired.
You're going to be fired, and you ended up having a great show, wouldn't you get a little emotional?
No, I should have a great show every day, Sprague. Okay? Should take care of business.
I hate when you just throw everything against the wall. Don't play the game. I can't stand it. We're waiting a phone call from Andy Levitre. NFL calls are always a little risky.
You never know.
Yeah.
Well, and you also hope, like, with players and athletes, Andy Levitre, of course, former Oregon State Beaver, current Atlanta Falcon, coming off an injury. You hope they're well-spoken, and you hope they're talkative. Because I gotta be honest with you, I've never heard Andy Levitre speak.
How do you not watch Andy Levitre?
He's a good one.
You know, okay, good.
We've covered him back in the day.
Okay, this is good to know.
One of those, you know, you know about offensive linemen. They're the most intelligent guys on the field.
That is true. Offensive linemen can get a little quirky sometimes.
They can, yeah.
They're almost like goalies to a certain extent. Like, you got to have a unique personality.
Goalies are very unique,
right?
People.
Like, just in order to, that's always blown me away about offensive linemen in football, to want to play without touching the ball, right? Because like, I was never a lineman in my football career.
Do you think that's like
there's a certain aspect of it that I wonder, like, what do you get out of this?
Yeah, I don't know.
Right?
You're playing the sport you love?
Like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they enjoy playing football, but your job is just to block another large human being every single play and just get beat up play after play after play after play.
Isn't that what makes when they get, like, a fumble or they accidentally catch a pass?
Yes.
Isn't that what makes it so great?
That's why fat guy touchdowns are the best thing in sports.
Who was it? Was it a college or NFL game last week? There was a lineman. Like a 20-yard touchdown run. I want to say it was an NFL game.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but I'm thinking Bills, and it probably wasn't the Bills game. But some offensive lineman last week got like a 20-yard touchdown
pass.
No,
it was a college game.
And yeah, what game was that?
Oh, man, it was number 99. I want to say it was Cal.
Cal didn't do it against Oregon State.
Not against Oregon State.
God, I can't remember what game that was.
The Fumblerooski is one of the greatest plays in the history of football.
But no, they made him an eligible receiver, and he went out to the flat. Nobody was guarding him.
He's just standing out there.
They threw it to him, and ran it in.
Fat guy touchdown. You see that? You mainly see it when a quarterback fumbles, like they get sacked in the pocket, and some left guard will pick it up and think he's Walter Payton. Try and stiff arm guys. Like, I got this. Don't worry.
But as a team, like as a fan of a team, doesn't that drive you the most crazy? crazy, though, is when the offensive lineman, instead of maybe falling on it with his body,
he
who's
picks
6'7".
Don't worry, guys. I'm going to make a play here.
I'm going to go get us those 2 yards right? to get back to the line.
Does anybody else think that? Like, I always do think that. Especially, like, defensive linemen, not so much. Like, defensive linemen, you're going after the quarterback. Like, you know, you got a chance to make plays. But offensive linemen, that just, it's got to be brutal. Play in and play out. Your job is just to block.
I've never really, you know what that position entails. Right? You don't think about it till you say that. Like, you're willing to play football and play a position where you literally never touch the ball on purpose.
Like wide receivers, you get it. You score on touchdowns. You're dancing tight ends, running backs.
You get a mix. You get to hit somebody and catch the
ball. Quarterbacks, obviously, the desire's there. Fullbacks, even they get a little fullback dive every now and then for the teams that still use fullbacks.
Hell, I'll even go D lineman. I get it. Sacking a guy, that's got to be such a badass feeling.
Like I was calling a winter hockey game a couple weeks ago, and there was actually a goal in the Western Hockey League last year from a goalie. Like there was a situation where they pulled the goalie at the end for the extra attacker. And the goaltender got the puck, and he just flung it down the length of the ice, and he scored. That's like the dream for every goalie. They never get to score.
That's cool. I don't know if it's as cool as a lineman in football picking the ball up and running like 10 yards for a touchdown. That's pretty badass.
No, I think goalie goal is better than a fat guy touchdown.
No way, because
better.
The goalie in hockey gets to
like you're
get
in
the
action.
Puck.
Yeah, well, you get the puck. Yeah, you're getting smacked with the puck from 90 mile an hour slap shots.
But
in the
at least
blue line.
You're part of. You're really the most important position on the field. And I know offensive lineman in football probably is for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's different because the puck's coming at you. Like, you have
true.
Active
I'll give you that.
Thing.
I'll give you that. You get to handle the puck. But to be fair, as a listener points out of the fan text line, the center touches the ball on every play.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a rather important position.
What about the guard? The tackle?
Yeah, you're just pulling, man. Somebody said, I love playing offensive line because I got to beat the hell out of somebody on every single play.
That's a good point, too. It's probably got to be a good feeling to pancake somebody. Like you're blocking for your running back and you just pancake 2 guys in a row and you watch that little guy just go for 55 yards and a touchdown run.
Now here's, all right, we're going to get it. Andy Levitre needs to call because we're getting way sidetracked here. A listener does agree, goalie goal better than lineman touchdown. But here's an interesting question. More goalie goals or lineman touchdowns? Got to be lineman touchdowns, right?
Ooh, in a given season?
Like inadvertently, because there's not many goalie goals that I could think of.
There's probably one or two a year. But I would probably say there's more lineman touchdowns.
Just falling on a ball in the end zone or scooping and scoring something.
Well, since they went to that trapezoid behind the goal line in the NHL a few years back, that cut down on it significantly. Because it used to be the goalies could go into the corners to get the puck and handle it. And so if you were on a power play or whatever, they could really line it up for empty netters at the end of the games. But now they can't skate into the corners to get the puck. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. And see, you know, the difficult part about that, too, is, as a listener points out, the offensive line is like they're the reason.
Oh,
like,
they're the reason for basically everything
like
successful for the team.
They're the most important position group on the field, arguably. And they never get credit. Like, how many offensive linemen can you realistically name across the National Football League?
You could name the big ones, but, like, even for the guys who are, let's say, 6'6", and they're maybe 3'10", and they're walking down the street that are NFL starting offensive linemen, how many people really identify, oh, he starts for the Lions?
Right, that's so-and-so.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
It wouldn't stand out.
Like, which I think is actually the coolest part, because now you're not being bothered like you would be if you're the quarterback.
No, you want the attention, man. If you're an offensive lineman, you would kill for that kind of attention.
Well, that's true.
See, like goalies, we all recognize how important goalies are. Like, everybody knows goal. Like, if you're a dominant goaltender and you lead a team to a Stanley Cup final, everybody knows who you are.
Yeah, Martin Brodeur scored a couple.
Well, that's because you don't like hockey.
Brodeur, Dominic Hasek.
You know the guys that were in the Cup. I mean, Jason Quick, Henrik Lundqvist, Crawford in Chicago. Like,
Crawford.
You know goalies. Get out of here.
That's like 5 or 6 guys.
Yeah, I'm saying the good ones. The dominant goaltenders in the NHL.
I don't know. I do like that everybody's texting in, hey, you know, former offensive lineman here. I played O-line in high school.
Like there's a lot of pride in that. I get that. They need more recognition, and they need to get the football more.
Well, even like free safety, like the non-Palomalu safety, the guy who's just sitting in the back, unless there's a deep ball, what are you doing?
You're helping out the run game.
Not really. Not unless you're blitzing or there's a break in your front seven. You're kind of just standing back there. Rather be a cover corner than a free safety.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I don't think he's calling in.
No, Andy Levitre, he totally beavered us right now.
Sometimes you like play the delay game in radio.
I'm in contact with their PR guys.
Yeah, but sometimes those guys can't get a hold of the pros like college guys get a hold of the college
kids. There's somebody traveling with the team that's So I don't know if the meeting ran long, if they were practicing right now. I'm not sure what the schedule is.
I'm not going to lie. In terms of stalling time and going Dean Smith four corners, that was pretty good.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, sometimes you stall time for a guest, and I know we started doing it there, but then you started making me think, those guys do get into the sport, and probably because they take pride in what they do, but they're into a sport where they knowingly don't touch the ball.
Yeah.
They don't get that attention. And I think that's a really interesting thing that you bring up.
They deserve more credit than they get.
Well, I think they do. I mean, look at the Seahawks, right? You talk about how bad their offensive line is.
Yeah, it sticks out like a sore thumb when it's bad. Like, when you don't have a good offensive line and you can't run the football and your quarterback's running for their lives week in and week out, then it sticks out a lot worse than it does. If it's a good offensive line, it just works like a well-oiled machine, and usually the running back's going to get most of the credit, the quarterback's going to get the credit because he's got time to throw the football.
Yeah, this listener's saying, yeah, because Earl Thomas sucks and just sits back there and never does anything. I don't know when I said a safety sucks.
Hey, phone's ringing.
Never made that comment, so that was a pretty dumb text. Another one, offensive linemen aren't well-known because they aren't getting their names called by announcers.
True.
Which is always a good
That's
thing.
A great point.
And then another one, safeties are like bullpen catchers. They don't do much. Unless they're asked to do something crucial.
I don't know. That's a bit of an extreme example for me. I think the safety is a lot more important than the bullpen catcher on the roster.
Oh, I think safety is real important. I'm just saying there's a lot of times in games where the free safety, not the strong, I mean, you're just protecting the coverage, right? And unless there's a breakdown in your front seven.
Hey, you better be ready, though. You're the last line of defense.
You really are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Swigard's in my ear like nine different times. Oh, there he is. Oh, no, he's not. Yeah. Oh, there he is. He's a butt dial. I don't know if he's on the line or not.
Yeah, phone rang. Somebody hung up. We didn't get Andy Levitre.
Okay, so maybe we get Andy Levitre. If we don't get Andy Levitre, that's fine. We'll move on. The Bruins are on the verge of falling to sub-500 7 weeks into the college football season. And who the hell is going to win the Pac-12 South? Because I have no idea at this point. Does it even matter? That's next on The Fan. All right, welcome back in. It's 1:16 here on Portland Sports Leader 1080, The Fan. And I was told we really have him this time. Offensive lineman for the Atlanta Falcons, former Oregon State offensive lineman, as the Falcons head to Seattle this week, and you can catch that game here on 1080, The Fan. Andy Levitre, you can find him on Twitter, at Levitre. Andy joins us on the Guild Mortgage mobile hotline. Andy, thanks for calling in, man. We really appreciate it. Instead of interviewing you in the last segment, we started talking about offensive linemen, and my co-host brought up a point, and I'm just kind of curious to get your thoughts on it, being in the league for 8 years now. Offensive linemen, you guys never get to touch the ball, and you, like, willingly participate in football games. What do you get out of being an offensive lineman day in and day out?
It's one of those things where you take pride in what you do, you know? It's a craft, something you can work on every day. You know, it's being unselfish and doing something for the greater good of our team, our offense, being able to win games and contribute in that manner. So although we don't get to touch the ball a lot and don't have a lot of stats, it's really cool to be a part of that.
Have you ever had the chance to score? We got into a whole conversation about fat guy touchdowns and how awesome they are. Have you ever scored? Like, have you ever, you know, picked up a fumble and ran it in? Have you ever had that opportunity?
I have not, no. Oh. But I do have 20 tackles.
Ooh.
Interesting fact.
That many interceptions? Just off of interceptions and fumbles, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I want to apologize because my co-host just basically called you fat on our radio program, so I just think you're a big guy, so I don't want to go that far. We're talking with Atlanta Falcons offensive lineman Andy Levitre. You have a knee bruise. A lot of people wondering how you're feeling today. Are you ready to go for the game against Seattle?
Yeah, I'm doing good. We just finished practice here a second ago at UW, so things are good. Had a crisp practice, so looking forward to the game on Sunday.
Well, I'm curious what's been clicking for you guys, because your offense is the number one offense in the NFL. You guys are rolling right now, big win in Denver. What's the difference for you guys this year versus last year?
I just think, you know, people have really stepped up and taken pride in what they're doing, and, you know, guys put in a lot of work this offseason. And throughout training camp and all that, I think everybody's been really locked in as to what we're doing. And, you know, I just think the whole attitude is so much better. And I think as a group, we're so much tighter than we were last year. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard for me to judge how we were as a group last year since I got here last minute. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from being here in the whole off season and kind of, you know, getting to know guys better throughout the off season and into training camp and whatnot, this team is so closely knit. And we do so much together, and we're all so tight. that it just makes it so much more fun to play for your brothers on game day. You know, so it's a cool thing. It's pretty unique here.
You know, whenever the conversation comes up in the NFL about toughest defenses or best defenses, Seattle's always right in that mix. Obviously, the Super Bowl speaks for itself. So now you're going through this week, you're game planning to play against them. You know, what's the toughest part about game planning against that Seattle defense, their defensive line, and what's the toughest part about playing against them?
They're tough, man. They got a good front seven. They bring it every snap. I mean, you got to be on your game. You know, they do a really good job. They play hard. So it's really going to be, you know, I think the biggest thing is going to be come down to us being consistent with the things that we're being coached and our game plan and staying focused throughout the entire game. I think those are some of the big things that we're going to need to do on Sunday.
We're talking with Andy Lavitre, offensive lineman for the Atlanta Falcons, former Oregon State Beaver. Your head coach is the former DC for Seattle. So I'm curious, in a game like this, has he been in a little more meetings helping you guys recognize things defensively that Seattle likes to do? Or is it a usual game week where maybe he's not talking to the offense quite as much?
I mean, he might give the coaches that information and relay it down to us, but you know, nothing's really been said specifically to us. But the coaches do a good job of breaking down film and helping us out throughout the week, you know, game planning and putting us in the right position to be successful. So, you know, I'm sure BC's done a good job of helping us all out in that aspect.
You know, speaking of coaches, we had a chance a couple of weeks ago to go out to Nebraska and watch the Oregon-Nebraska game and see Mike Riley and catch up with him. Have you been following his success at all this year with the Huskers?
Yeah, I do. I still follow Coach Riley. I'm so thankful for the opportunity that he gave me when I was at Oregon State. That whole staff is so great, and I still keep in touch with some of those guys. So it's really cool to watch them, you know, do their thing out there. Although they're not a part of Beaver Nation anymore, I still have a lot of respect for them and what they do.
Well, if he's still there when your career ends, are you going to be one of the 100 former players that go from Oregon State to becoming Nebraska and going on their staff?
I don't think so. I think after, you know, all my, when I'm done playing football, I commit my time to my family.
Did you see that picture of him with like a bunch of former Beavers? Did you think that was a little weird seeing all those guys in Husker red?
Are you talking about some of the players that are out there?
Yeah, they had a big team picture the other day that they put all over Instagram and Twitter. I'm just curious if you were able to see that, because it was Mike Riley surrounded by, you know, James Rogers and Agnew and Keaton Kristick. I was curious if you saw it and if you think stuff like that's a little odd to see.
You know, I think I did actually come across that the other day. That's pretty cool, though. I think it just shows you, you know, the kind of character and you know, the amount of respect that people have for Coach Riley and the rest of the coaching staff there. You know, to have guys, regardless of where they're at, it's, they appreciate so much everything they've done for them when they were in school, that they take the time to come back and visit them and, you know, they'll catch up with them. So I think that's a really cool thing.
You know, speaking with, you know, Oregon State, have you had a chance to talk much with Gary Anderson, get to know the new head coach at all, and kind of what do you think about the job he's done now a little over a year into his tenure?
You know, I haven't got a chance to talk to him in person. We texted back and forth a little bit, and, you know, I haven't really made my way out to Oregon State. Gosh, it's been quite a while, but, you know, I feel like when I'm done playing, you know, I'll have more time to go out there and keep an eye on the Beavs. But I always try and follow him when I can, mm-hmm. You know, when we're on the road and I can maybe catch a game late at night or something like that. But, you know, they're a tough team. They've been struggling a little bit, I think, but, you know, I still think they can – be resilient and they can push through some of the losses they've had. I think they got some quality guys on that team. I'm sure they're good quality guys like Coach Riley had when he was there. So, you know, I always support them and keep an eye on them.
We're talking with former Beaver and Falcons offensive lineman Andy Lavitre. I just saw a thing on King 5 News in Seattle. It said 20,000 people right now in the Seattle area are without power. The wind's coming in pretty strong on the phone call right now. Are you in the middle of a monsoon as we're talking?
No, I'm actually standing in the stadium at University of Washington, but there's probably some wind coming off the lake. It's not terrible, but when we first got in here, it was dumping some rain and a lot windier.
Is that going to affect the game plan at all tomorrow? Because we're going through it here right now in Portland, too, where it's just been nasty, windstorms, lots of rain. Is that affecting your guys' game plan for tomorrow?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that really plays a part. I think you just have to prepare. You know, prepare the elements as best you can so that you don't have to worry about them on game day. But from what I heard from the weather, it's supposed to pass by Sunday, so I think we should be all right. But, you know, you always got to prepare for the worst.
Can you believe you're an old man in the NFL now?
I don't like to think of myself as that, but I guess some might view that in their eyes.
Has it hit you in the off season? Did it hit you in training camp? And as the season progresses, that you go in, week out, and you know on Tuesdays maybe a little more sore than you were maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, some things get harder and harder as your career goes on, but, you know, I just try not to let those things bother me. Just continue to focus on, you know, what I can control.
Talking with Andy Levitre, Falcons offensive lineman. I am curious, you're going against Seattle, tough place to play because of the environment. I know the noise is a little different for you guys when you're in the dome because you're on offense, you're a little more quiet, but does playing in the dome and being around noise that loud basically every home game for you, does that help the offense a little bit going into Seattle?
It's usually quieter when we're on the field, so
yeah,
it's harder to get that. But, you know, we played in a couple loud places already this season. I've played here before. I know it's a pretty loud place to play. So, you know, I think that just comes down to us staying focused in the game and making sure we're, you know, we're communicating and all being on the same page. I think that's going to be huge for us this week.
Do you want to guarantee a win before we let you go?
What was that?
You want to guarantee a win before we let you go?
I can't say that, but, you know, hey, we're going to play our best, and we'll see what's going to happen. You know, I know regardless of what happens, we're going to give our best. So, you know, as long as they give us our theirs, we'll, you know, may the best man win.
All right, man. Get down to Corvallis soon. Go catch a game. It's been a while.
I got to get out there. I know it's hard to time up during the season.
All right, there we go. Andy Levitre, Falcons offensive lineman, former Oregon State Beaver, in the middle of a tornado right now in Seattle. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Yeah, take it easy.
There we go. Jeez Louise.
Sounds like the weather's going to be nice this weekend in Seattle, huh? A couple thousand people out of power.
Good Lord.
I now understand why. Bit of a windstorm up there.
It sounded like he was going to get taken away. I'm not going to lie to you. The way it came in on the phone.
Yeah, we did call him fat and old in that interview. So
no, I called him old. You did call him fat.
Yeah, I mean, I asked if he's... Well, he is. He's an offensive lineman. I asked if he ever scored a fat guy touchdown.
Hey, he didn't get offended by it.
I think he understands he's an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
It comes with the territory. Like, you're fat for a purpose. It's not like you're just fat because you're lazy. You're fat for a reason.
So do you think in that interview, maybe he was a little more hurt by the "you're old" comment?
Absolutely by the old comment.
This is eighth season.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Time flies sometimes. I mean, you remember him at Oregon State under Mike Riley, and it's unbelievable. He's already been in the NFL now for 8 years.
I remember it like it was yesterday, the 2008 season. It's unreal that it's been that long. But Andy Levitre, Atlanta Falcons, as they get ready to take on the Seattle Seahawks. What do you want to do at 1:30?
Let's talk a little Pac-12 football.
Do you want to do some Pac-12 football? What do we have scheduled for 1:30? Yeah, let's do Pac-12 football. I'd much rather do that than talk about preseason Blazers that you haven't watched yet. So let's talk about the Pac-12 South. Who's going to win the Pac-12 South? And can you believe the UCLA Bruins could be sub-500 7 weeks into the season? That's next. No,
welcome back in. 1:33 on a Friday. At some point in the next hour and a half, we got to get to Ken Bone news. Wade our way back into the Bone Zone.
I don't know if we want to go into the Bone Zone anymore.
You don't want to go into the Bone Zone on a Friday?
The Bone Zone's turning from like a fun joke to like, oh my God.
He had some comments about Jennifer Lawrence and her...
I don't even know if we could read the comments about Jennifer Lawrence.
I don't know if we could or not. It was like from a Reddit Q&A. I'm fascinated with Ken Bone. Ken Bone is fascinated with Ken Bone, and people are stealing the Bone Zone.
Yeah, people have stolen the Bone Zone.
Like, it's all over Twitter. I heard it. I can't remember where, but I was watching TV last night, and somebody used the Bone Zone. It's just, you know.
We can't get proper credit from this show, huh?
We didn't trademark that thing soon enough, apparently.
Well, and I'll say this, too. Another thing that comes from the Ken Bone saga and story. Again, I still don't visit Reddit unless somebody says there was an interesting Q&A on there.
I've never been on Reddit.
Like, I have legitimately...
Yeah.
Never gone to, is it reddit.com?
I think so, yeah. I've never done it before. I read the snippets of people like put it together in an article, but I've never myself actually participated.
No, I don't either.
Don't really know what it is. But yeah, we'll see. Maybe we'll get to the Bone Zone here at some point over the last hour and a half of the show. Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll take a look to the ALCS and NLCS, crunch time in Major League Baseball. But let's talk a little Pac-12 football. If I just were to throw this out there right now, it's kind of an interesting question, and I feel like we're going to get a lot of different answers. Who's the best team in the Pac-12 South?
Ooh. I think it's still too early to determine, but I think right now, how do you not go?
You still have a three-way tie right now. Arizona State, Utah, Colorado, all 2-1 in conference, tied atop.
I think USC's still kind of in the conversation, but I would have to say Utah, Colorado are kind of like a tie.
Okay.
Right? I mean, not just because they're in first, but just
what
we've seen.
Even though Colorado just lost to USC.
A team that was a close loss.
It was
on
a good game.
Road.
It was a good game.
Yeah, I would give Colorado a nod.
Okay, yeah, it is interesting because when you look at the South this year, I think almost everybody, the vast majority of people, picked UCLA to win that division. You had Rosen coming back. I did too. This was kind of their year. And look, there's still plenty of football to be played, but they're 1-2 in the conference at this point in the season. They're 3-3 overall. And now they're potentially playing without Josh Rosen this weekend on the road in the Palouse against the Washington State Cougars, who all of a sudden have figured things out themselves. And you kind of teased it a little earlier this hour. It's pretty crazy to think that at this point, if UCLA loses this weekend, which I'm going to pick them to, whether Rosen plays or not.
Me too.
They're below 500 seven games into the season.
I can't believe it. Right. I really can't believe it, because when we did those picks, not only did I pick them to win the South, I picked them to win the conference. And I think I went as far as to say they were going to make the playoff. Whoops. That was a big mistake.
And listener points out of the fan text line, every year seems to be UCLA's year, right?
But here's the thing. Every year that we've talked about UCLA, whether it was Brett Hundley and Jim Mora or now Josh Rosen and Jim Mora, like even the year Kirk Herbstreit had him in the playoff, they were 10-2 that year. I mean, that wasn't like the most preposterous idea. They had a good season. So I don't think they were ever that far off. My whole thing, it wasn't just about Jim Mora, because I've always felt a little uneasy about Jim Mora. It's basically been about the talent. And I just assume Josh Rosen coming back, sophomore year, Jake Browning, same situation. Look how Browning season's going. I figured Josh Rosen was going to have a monster year, and his offensive line's been a little inconsistent. His throws have been off. He's getting banged up now. It's just completely falling apart. And I don't know how many people watched the UCLA-ASU game last weekend. But Jim Mora got a penalty. He the entire game, he was going on tirades. I mean, he makes Jim Harbaugh look tame. He really does. He goes the whole game from start to finish of slapping his hat on the ground and screaming and crying the whole game. And there is a big element of that to me where I know Harbaugh does it, but Harbaugh can also be under control in the right moments. I don't think Jim Mora is. And I think his team kind of reflects who he is as a coach on the field, which puts you in this situation of potentially being 3-4 7 weeks into the season. It's one thing to be sub 500 and be maybe 1-2. It's another to be 7 weeks in. You're past the halfway point and be 3-4 if they lose to Washington State. That's just, we've heard it before from scouts, from other coaches that remain anonymous. They have too much talent to be doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let's hear from the coaches on each side of this game. This will be the Pac-12 After Dark game tomorrow night. UCLA up in Pullman. It's a 7:30 kick on ESPN. And let's hear from Mike Leach. He talked on the Pac-12 coaches call this week about, does it really matter if Rosen's going to play?
Well, they'll have a quality quarterback in there, so there's, you know, that doesn't really make any difference. But they have really good players, and you just prepare for that. But yeah, whether he's there or not, somebody's going to be there, and they're going to run the same stuff.
It's a great quote. I love Mike Leach. He also talked about the UCLA defense.
Physical, aggressive. You know, they're seems like everybody can run out there. I mean, you look at their. I don't see any real weak spots.
That's fantastic. What about the coach you were just talking about, Jim Mora? A bit of a temper tantrum from him last week. He's known for a few of those. He talked about Washington State.
And they're rolling, you know. Offensively, you look at them statistically, and, you know, they're one of the top offenses in the country. Not in the Pac-12, but in the country. Defensively, they play extremely hard, and they get after the ball. They play with great energy, and you know, just have tremendous respect for the things that are happening there in Pullman, the things that Coach Leach is accomplishing with those players and the way that they've, you know, really bought into the system and into the process. And it's very evident on tape that they're playing with a lot of passion and a lot of confidence.
Yeah, Cougs are a 7.5-point favorite in this game up in Pullman. And, you know, whether or not Rosen plays, it feels like a pretty confident cover for me, at least for the Cougars, just the way they've got it rolling the last 2 weeks. And as we've mentioned, if UCLA loses, they fall to 3-4. And depending on what happens, you know, either Arizona State or Colorado is going to win. That team will remain in that conversation atop the South leaderboard. If Utah wins, which I expect them to do in Corvallis, this is one of those games that could basically eliminate UCLA from the Pac-12 South race with 5 weeks to go. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. And on the flip side of things for Washington State, it's just another feather in their cap. I mean, you lose your first two games by a combined 6 points. They got it rolling since Idaho. Yeah, I mean, they should beat Idaho, but then they blew out Oregon at home, dominated Stanford on the road, and it doesn't get any easier. They go to Arizona State next weekend, so this is a chance, again, to put a feather in the cap for Washington State and to improve to 3-0 in conference play.
I think almost a win against UCLA, doesn't that piss off Cougar fan that much more for what they
did?
Yeah,
you look back to say, how could you not beat Eastern Washington, but you could beat Oregon, Stanford, and UCLA in three straight weeks.
I will say the Rosen factor, I think, has to remain just because of how talented the kid is. If he plays, maybe they got a chance to pull some magic. But if he's not playing, I know Leach is downplaying that. If he's not playing, I think that thing is going to get ugly.
Yeah, a backup quarterback going into Pullman with the way Washington State can score points.
Well, their running game, by the way, UCLA, that's also been a big struggle for them. Jim Mora was really adamant in the offseason about getting the run game. He wants to be more of a Stanford than maybe like an Oregon or Washington type offense. And their running game really hasn't gotten loose yet. The run game struggles, and you're playing a backup quarterback. I wouldn't like your chances in the Palouse. I think this Washington State team's too focused at this point. And as a listener points out, you know, for all the talk about Oregon spiraling down, and they have, you could really say the same thing about UCLA. They fall to 3-4. Those expectations are down there just as much as they are up here for Mark Helfrich, for Jim Mora. So I'm curious what the reaction's going to be in Bruin land if they do fall to 3-4. But on the Pac-12 South thing, I would say this. Does it matter who wins the Pac-12 South?
No, Washington and Washington State are the two best teams in the conference.
So if let's say Utah can get healthy.
At this point, no. The Apple Cup is the Pac-12 championship game.
Wow.
It really is. And look, and things can change. Teams can get banged up. Utah is going through a lot of injuries. Maybe they get healthy, and that puts them atop the South. But just from what I've seen so far, especially in Pac-12 play at this point, no, on a neutral field, would I pick anybody in the South to beat Washington or Washington State? Absolutely not.
And another year then that the South does not win the conference.
Once again, yeah. And you look, you mentioned UCLA and their tailspin struggle. So they're at Washington State this week, and next week they're home against Utah. And then they go to Colorado after a bye week. So a tough stretch here for the Bruins. We'll see how that one goes down. 7:30, it's Pac-12 after dark. The other game to keep your eye on, we talked briefly earlier in the week about Stanford and Notre Dame and kind of what's happened to those two programs. But the other game in the conference, it's a 5 o'clock kick on the Pac-12 network, is Colorado and Arizona State. The two other teams tied atop the Pac-12 South. Colorado, despite Arizona State being 5-1 and coming off that UCLA win, the Buffs are a 12-point favorite at home.
Doesn't really surprise me, though. ASU, I think, is a little inconsistent. Not sure how they play against big-time opponents. Colorado had a good close loss at USC last weekend. USC's trying to win their third game in a row. Colorado's a damn good football team, so that didn't really shock me much.
Yeah, a couple of interesting games around the Pac-12 to keep your eye on this weekend as we continue to move forward to seeing who's going to be representing the North and the South in the Pac-12 championship game. We're down to four teams in Major League Baseball. The championship series is all set to begin tonight. It's crunch time on the diamond. That's next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
You ask what's the difference in the past and this is just executing at crunch time.
Who's feeling the heat?
When you win, it's the greatest feeling in the world. And when you lose, it's the lowest feeling in the world.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 per month. So why would you ever pay more for a gym membership?
Got that right. Crunch time. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month. Why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? You can find out more about where Sprague and I work out at crunch.com. Coming up here in the final hour of the show, we'll talk a little bit more about that Oregon State-Utah game tomorrow down in Corvallis. Debate a little NFL versus college football. And, of course, we got a Sprague the Line coming up at 2:30. Sprague had a good week last week. You went 3-0, made up a little ground against Kevin Todd.
I'll be going 3-0 this weekend, catching up even more on Kevin Todd and passing Kevin Todd.
Guarantees. Let me check the standings real quick. You are...
What am I, 3 back?
You are 3 back, yeah. So he's 12-6 now on the year. You're 9-9. Look at you back to the Mendoza line.
Hey, if I'm over 500, if Kevin Todd wins, great. I'm going to beat Kevin Todd. Just but if I'm over 500, you got to feel great.
Just win more than you lose, man. That's half the battle in life. So we'll do that coming up final hour and, of course, get you all set for the weekend. But tonight is the start of the championship series in baseball. It all begins in the American League side of things. It feels like the Blue Jays and Indians haven't played in a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
been quite a bit of a layoff, but they start tonight. It is in Cleveland, Estrada versus Kluber, and then tomorrow the NLCS will start in Chicago. The Dodgers have still not decided or announced who their starter for Game 1 is, but John Lester will be going for the Cubs. And I'm just kind of curious out there who people are rooting for in the American League side of things and National League side of things as we're down to the Final Four here in baseball.
I love the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't hate them like a lot of people out there. I don't know why. I'm a fan of Jose Bautista. But I will say, I think I'm pulling for Cleveland a little bit.
Don't you kind of want to see the Indians in there?
Yeah, I do. I think the Indians have the better pitching staff, but we'll see if those red-hot bats from the Blue Jays can be slowed down at all because of the way they played against the Texas Rangers. I don't know. There's something about Terry Francona, because this series feels a little bit like the NLCS, maybe not as extreme, where you go into it and all people talk about is Chicago Cubs. This one, I think, is a lot of the Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. And I get it. They're playing great baseball. But there's something about Terry Francona managing the Cleveland Indians and how they kind of flew under the radar for most of the season. They came out from the get-go, took the division lead. They were leading by, I want to say, 5 or 6 games at the All-Star break. And they continued to play really good baseball in the second half, move on, get to the LCS, sweep Boston out, which, by the way, a lot of people, Boston was their pick to get to the World Series.
Yeah, he had the David Ortiz storyline of him playing his last postseason run. And
I think Terry Francona and the Indians, I think they can do it. So I like the Blue Jays. If they get there, great. Not surprising in the least, but I think I'm pulling for Cleveland a little bit. Let Cleveland have 1 year of some good sports.
Yeah, there was an interesting story. I don't know if you guys saw this, but in the ALCS, apparently the Trevor Bauer, did you see this story, Swag? Trevor Bauer was scheduled to start Game 2. Mm-hmm. Of the ALCS, and he has been scratched from that start because he hurt his right pinky finger doing routine maintenance on his drone.
What?
Yeah. So Terry Francona had a quote. He said, it's kind of self-explanatory. We've all at some point had a drone-related problem. He expects Bauer to be ready for Game 3 in Toronto, and Josh Tomlin will start Game 2 for the Indians. So that's kind of a curveball to have to deal with. For Cleveland, I think you're right in terms of nobody's really paid attention to Cleveland this year and the season that they've had. Maybe it's just the makeup of the team. Not a ton of household names, I guess, in that lineup that most folks outside of diehard baseball fans would recognize. But they've been a legitimate team, and Terry Francona is as good as it gets in terms of managing. And once again, I think we're in a situation where nobody's really going to pay attention to that series. This happens in every sport when you get a team. A la the Cubs, you can equate that to teams in the NFL or the NBA. There's just certain organizations that are a bigger deal and garner more headlines, and the Cubs are certainly that way in baseball. And I think this American League Championship Series has a chance to be a great series. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the Blue Jays sweeping the Rangers, and here they are now. Both teams swept their series in the divisional round, but all the eyeballs are going to be on LA and the Cubs. Kershaw, the Cubs trying to get to their first World Series since 1945. Wrigley gets that kind of postseason baseball again. And I think Cleveland and Toronto's got a chance to be a great series.
What's the better matchup for the sport?
In terms of a World Series matchup?
Getting eyeballs, yeah.
In terms of a World Series matchup, I think it's the Cubs and the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And people know the Blue Jays for their lineup. They hit a ton of home runs, and Cleveland can hit home runs as well. But the Blue Jays have some household names in that lineup. It's a great atmosphere at the Rogers Center, a raucous crowd, and not to mention that is a nationwide fan base. Like, if you had Toronto and Chicago in the World Series, not only are you talking two major media markets, but you're also talking two nationwide fan bases, which would be great for ratings.
You don't think the Progressive Field audience can get loud and scream?
No, it can. I'm not saying that. But I do think in terms of, I think the baseball hierarchy is rooting for Toronto and Chicago.
There was a really funny picture I saw in describing Cleveland sports right now. And for people who have seen the Adam Sandler movie, The Grown-Ups, I want to say it's Rob Schneider's kids that randomly show up to their house. And the first is like a tall, hot blonde. The second one is the Asian chick from Real World, smoking hot. And then there's the third one that's really short, a little uglier. And people basically label the tall blonde one the Cavs, the hot Asian chick. Yeah, they named that Cleveland Indians. And then the short, ugly looking one is the Browns.
I will say this. I'm happy to see the number of people that are terrible human beings as well rooting for the Cubs to lose in a disastrous fashion.
That has been...
I'm not the only one, man.
No, you're not for sure the only one on that
one. I thought I was just cold-hearted and it was just kind of a low blow to Cub fans everywhere. But we got a couple of these at the fan text line. Somebody said, I'm rooting for the Cubs to lose Game 7 of the World Series, giving up the lead in the 9th inning.
That's brutal.
Indians versus Cubs in the World Series. Cubs lose game seven in a late game.
God, we are sick people, man. We're rooting for the misery of Chicago fans.
I don't like change, Sprague. Okay? And if the Cubs start winning, it changes everything I know about baseball. I don't know if I'm ready to handle that yet.
As somebody texting in, I'm rooting for the Indians just because of Major League.
Right? I mean, there's the Major League rooting interest there for sure.
That could be okay.
Somebody else said, anybody but the Dodgers, their bullpen takes 3 hours to pitch four innings and they're boring to watch in general.
Wow.
That is a little true. Kenley Jansen took he takes his sweet time.
But he also does those quick pitch things. He tries to catch you off guard.
He's got like a cup of tea out there. He's reading a newspaper.
Well, and I saw somebody else tweeted us this morning of like, that game was how long? Like 4.5 hours, I think they said. Hurry it up.
It was a long game, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It's a long game. The seventh went real long. But come on, guys. Yeah. College football has been four to 4.5 hours. That Nebraska-Oregon game we went to was 4.5 hours long.
It comes with postseason baseball, too, because you get so many more pitching changes where it's not just quite as routine as the regular season.
They had 44 pitching changes in the Dodger series. That's the record.
There were a ton of them. It's going to be a great championship series. Dodgers and Cubs should be a good one. The heavy money. Is going to be on the Chicago Cubs, especially with the fact that you just had Kershaw throw in game four. He had to come out of the bullpen and pitch last night in the ninth inning in game five. He's probably not going to start until game three in L.A., and at that point, you're still even going a little bit on short rest. So the heavy money is going to be on the Cubs. That is their series to lose, which I don't know, maybe as a Cub fan, that worries you a little bit that you're such a heavy favorite.
You were a heavy favorite against the Giants.
And they won. They took care of business.
I don't know why that would worry you then. You have a good team. I read a really good piece, by the way. I know we're up against it. I read a really good piece. It's lengthy, but it's Wright Thompson, who I think is the best sports writer in America. He wrote a really good piece about Theo Epstein, who Theo is, his mannerisms, from Boston to Chicago, just really in-depth, great stuff. And there's an element of this team that even though they're so hyped, I think the way that they're put together, I don't know if you get traditionally as nervous about them being the favorite as maybe you once did with a Cubs team.
Yeah, don't worry about him screwing it. It'll be fun. It'll be a couple of fun series. It all starts tonight in Cleveland. Keep an eye on it. The Indians and the Blue Jays. And then tomorrow, they're both going. The Dodgers and Cubs is the night game at 5 o'clock. Indians and Jays will play the day game at 1 o'clock. So the ALCS and NLCS are here. We're down to the Final Four in Major League Baseball. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month. Why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? You can find out more about where Sprague and I work out at crunch.com. Lots to get to here in the final hour of the show. As we mentioned, we got a Sprague the Line coming up bottom of the hour. Kevin Todd will join us at 2:30 like he does every single week. Good weekend for Sprague last week. Is anyone actually going to Corvallis and braving the conditions tomorrow? We'll talk about that, preview the Oregon State game and the Utah game. It's going to be nasty down there, man.
It is.
I'm just seeing if anybody's going to brave those conditions.
And I got some breaking news in sports media.
We got breaking news in sports media. We'll talk NFL versus college, get you all set for the weekend. Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.